Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. One of the people honored at the recent Aztec Awards Gala for his contributions to the Alberta science and technology community was Dr. Matt Spence, head of the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. And the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Machine Learning celebrated its first birthday with a day-long forum on data mining. Russ Greiner, Richard Sutton, and Michael Bowling talk about why Alberta is becoming the place to do research in this new field. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Since its formation about a quarter century ago, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research has grown to become one of the finest supporters of health research in the world, a model for others to follow. At the helm for the last 13 years has been Dr. Matt Spence, himself a practitioner and researcher in the area of brain dysfunction. At the recent Aztec Foundation Gala, Matt Spence was honored with an Aztec Award for his outstanding contribution to the Alberta science and technology community.
Well, I'm very flattered and very proud to receive the award, but you know, I really should point out that it's a credit to an awful lot of other people that I just have the privilege and pleasure of either leading or associating with, because the success in science and technology in the province is really a team sport. It's due to the activities of a whole host of people in the universities, in industry, and at the foundation.
When you look back over your life and some of the things that have contributed to this, what would be the things that stand out for you?
Well, I think a number of things. I think my own education, both as an undergraduate and as a medical student, my postgraduate work when I, you know, decided to become a clinical investigator, a doctor researcher, and then the colleagues that I've had and students and fellows that I've had over the years from whom I've learned so much. So I've really had a great career, an opportunity to see and take care of patients, but also to take the problems that I saw in the clinics and in the wards back into the laboratory and to try to work on them to solve them and to bring what you found in the laboratory back and trying to apply it in the wards and the clinics. It's really a marvelous challenge on both sides.
What was your area of research?
My area of research, I was basically interested in brain and the development of the brain particularly. And because I'm a physician, I had an interest in disorders of development in children, things which cause mental retardation or genetic diseases which cause illness in children. And so I was able to combine the two together, the research interest in brain, if you like, and its development, together with looking at children in the hospital or in the clinic who had abnormalities in development.
Well, even when you look at the changes in the 13 years that you've been here with the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, just the technology is phenomenal. We have the advent of MRIs, and now we're dealing with things at the atomic level with nanotechnology. What does that say to you?
Well, it says to me that you know, we are becoming increasingly, I think, sophisticated in our approaches, and we're seeing, I think, a very imaginative blend worldwide of both original thinking, I mean, you know, in terms of developing original concepts, but also of technologies, new technologies and platform technologies, which give us a jump forward in terms of our way of being able to pose, ask, and answer questions. For example, you know, the synchrotron being built in Saskatoon, which will allow, it's like a giant microscope, which allows us to look at the crystal structure of proteins. That sort of technology allows us to get three-dimensional structures of things that before we could only model. We had a rough idea what they might look like, but not really a very good one. Now we're getting detail of the fundamental activities of these. And, of course, when you can understand the structure, then you can make intelligent guesses as to how these things work.
Where is health or medical research going when you look at the types of things that the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research funds? It seems to now have a very broad spectrum. Where are we headed?
Well, it used to be that, you know, research, in quotation marks, at least in health, was very much at the level of understanding fundamental biology. And so you were looking at molecules and test tubes, at model systems in mice and so on. And this was the way that you tried to get at the fundamental understanding of disease. Now we've really broadened out our look at health, because what we understand now is that health is a combination of what you are, in other words, your genes and your proteins and your body, and the impact of the environment on us, in other words, what's happening in society around us. Because when I use the environment, I'm not just talking about the air and the water and so on. I'm also talking about being employed, having a house to live in, a good education, etc. Because all of these things have a major impact on how long we live and how healthily we live. So you are really a combination of nature and nurture. And we will never empty the intensive care units of the hospital simply by understanding our biology, nor will we empty them by understanding the environment, lifestyle, and its impacts. But the combination of them, I think, will help us to be a much healthier society in the future. And so that's why the foundation now is a remit, basically, that goes all the way from fundamental studies on molecules and test tubes right through to questions in the population, in the small communities in Alberta, from border to border, looking at things that impact on the health system and the health of whole populations.
The foundation that you've been at the helm now for a number of years, it's considered one of the successes in the world, and a number of other organizations have tried to model themselves after what your foundation is doing. What do you think attributes to the success?
Well, I think there are a number of things. I mean, I think first, and not necessarily in order of priority, I was going to say first and foremost, but I would hesitate to sort of assign any, you know, the number of values in this. But I think we have to give full credit to government, who recognized the importance of the investment and set up the foundation to begin with, and recognized the importance that it should be arm's length from government, and have respected that arm's length relationship through the years. So I think that's been very important. The leadership of the Board of Trustees, who are an independent group, has been critical of the success of the foundation. I think the founding president, Lionel McLeod, and the people who have helped and advised the foundation have been critical. But probably one of the major factors in its success has been that we have always set ourselves an international standard. We've benchmarked the foundation internationally. What we've said is that the science that we support here in the province of Alberta must meet international standards. And if it doesn't, we simply will not provide support. And so by setting a very high target for the foundation, we've helped to set a high target for our Alberta institutions and for the whole health system in Alberta. And I think that's reflected in what's happening in the province. And I guess that some of that credit reflects back to the foundation again.
What would you see as being some of the benefits or the spin-offs of the work that the foundation has done or the research that you've supported?
Well, of course, there's the direct contributions to knowledge. There's the application of the knowledge in clinical care or in products or services within the commercial sector. There are the fact that it attracts other people to the province and trainees and so on come through. But perhaps just as important is the fact that it creates a very smart team of people or group of people within the province who can access knowledge from around the world and apply it here in Alberta. I mean, one of our best guarantees of having a first-class health system is to have first-class people here in the province who may not make the discoveries themselves. They may be working in another area, but they're connected with people around the world. And so a discovery in Berlin or in Tokyo and so on gets applied very rapidly in the Alberta system. It's almost like paying to play. In other words, because we have this great system in Alberta, we're on top of what goes on worldwide. The other thing it does, of course, is help to retain our skilled people throughout the health system, because they like to associate with the brightest and best. And so you'll find that you can attract excellent clinicians and practitioners of one sort and another because of the density of research in the area. They naturally gravitate to it.
You're going to be leaving this post sometime soon. What's ahead for you? I understand you have a motorcycle.
Well, that's one of the things that's ahead. Over the years, my dear wife and I have enjoyed riding a motorcycle around the country and seeing all sorts of marvelous places. Alberta itself is just a great place to explore. And there are just so many roads that I'd like to explore and take a look at, and parts of the country I'd love to see. There's reading I would like to do. There's all sorts of things. I haven't any hesitation in saying I suspect I'll be busier than I've ever been, but it'll be doing something different.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Matt Spence, President and CEO of the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research and winner of the 2003 Aztec Award for Outstanding Contributions to the Alberta Science and Technology Community. It's only a year since the Alberta Ingenuity Fund established the Center for Machine Learning at the University of Alberta. In that short period of time, the center has already made its mark and is attracting top researchers from around the world. Dr. Russ Greiner is a professor in computing sciences at the University of Alberta and founding director of the center. I spoke to him about the center's progress at the recent forum on machine learning and data mining.
Wonderfully, wonderfully, beyond our expectations. We've had tremendous success with recruiting. Rich Sutton, who you just heard, is the authority on reinforcement learning. We were fortunate to be able to lure him here. Dale Schumanns is tremendously gifted. He just arrived. He's another scholar that will help us tremendously. He's got worldwide reputation. Michael Bowling is our third major recruit, just graduated from Carnegie Mellon, which is the major center of machine learning in the world. We're trying, but they're the kingpin still. He's a new graduate from there. That's all happening. The Machine Learning Conference, the International Machine Learning Conference, will be in Banff, and Dale and I are chairing that this year. So another kudu to our center for getting that. We've had several best paper prizes. We've had several collaborations that have been started. If I figure where we were going to be, this is two notches above that. I'm very delighted.
Why do you think that is? Why is it going so well?
Well, having the infuse of money has helped a lot. We can make people promises, and we know we can keep them, about getting good postdocs, good students, getting good environments. Telling people you come here, you have good ideas, we'll help you write the code. We have professional staff here. And also, it's just a fun place. We were close to being there, but without the Alberta Ingenuity Funds, that ramped us up to the next level. And all of a sudden, now we're a major power in the scenes. Having Rich Sutton here, him by himself would make us a center. Having him to augment the good people here, all of a sudden we're a nonpareil, right? If you're doing game playing, you come here. You want to do learning and games, you better be here. There's nowhere else you can look at. I've been tremendously successful. My colleagues on Alberta Cancer Board, that's another lure that I had to keep my work going. That's been exciting because they have so much data there. All the cancer cases that come through Alberta come through the center, so we do have biopsies and other data that you can tap into. So for me personally, it's been very helpful being in Alberta. So lots of opportunities have happened.
Today the center is hosting a conference on machine learning and data mining. What's data mining?
Data mining is very similar to machine learning. It's looking at vast quantities of data and finding the patterns in it. It's mostly a sociological effect. It's the database people who started looking at this class of problems called it data mining, and the machine learning people, AI people, called it machine learning. But there's a lot of commonality. In fact, several of the speakers call themselves data mining people rather than AI people. But we're very inclusive. We want to get all these different people involved with it.
How would it be used or applied?
Well, both data mining and machine learning are used to find patterns in data. We've given some examples here of finding the proper treatment to give patients was one of the examples I used in my presentation. Finding who's going to default on credit cards is another example that we're not using here particularly, but other people have dealt with. We talked about Rich Sutton's work, learning to control robots or do path planning are examples that have been applied, and a whole host of examples that have been used.
So is the idea that you look for potential scenarios and then this helps in the decision making?
Yes, that's a good way to think about it.
You've got a wide range of speakers today, and you've also invited people from outside the university community. What is it that you're trying to accomplish from today's forum?
We have several contacts in industry that we already know about and we're pursuing. A lot of people who we know don't know what machine learning is, and they don't know the opportunities. We want to get them here to see what we're up to hopefully lead to additional collaborations for myself and my colleagues. In addition to the industrial members, other members of the university may have problems that are exactly machine learning problems. They just don't know it. We're hoping that this forum will open their eyes to the possibilities and again lead to collaborations, which hopefully will lead to publications as well as new science being developed and new products.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure. It's great talking to you.
That was Dr. Russ Greiner, a professor of computing sciences at the University of Alberta and founding director of the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Machine Learning. One of the presenters at the forum on data mining was Dr. Richard Sutton. Richard has come to the University of Alberta from the United States to take up the I-Corps research chair in reinforcement learning.
Reinforcement learning means that you learn by trial and error interaction with your environment.
How does it work?
It's a little bit modeled after the way animals work. So you interact with the environment, you take actions, you see the outcomes. Occasionally you see rewards or penalties, and you have to determine the way to behave so as to optimize the rewards and minimize the penalties.
Now that sounds an awful lot like the way you might teach your kids with either positive or negative reinforcement. How do you translate that into something that something artificial or machine-like or computerized could learn?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right on all levels. How can you convert that into something that a computer might do? It's a challenge, but you can do it step by step. You can identify something that acts as the rewards and that will changes behavior. We will describe as a reward because it changes the reward, changes the behavior to more frequently do what we think of as rewarded. So we have simulated agents that do things, and then we penalize them or reward them for what they do.
What would be a penalty or a reward?
Well, what it all comes down to, actually, is that the only difference between a penalty and a reward is it's a different wire going into the agent. Now, it's a virtual wire in a computer, but basically it's just a different wire. There's two signals going into the agent, and one of them it tries to maximize, and one of them it tries to minimize.
In the presentation that you were just giving, one of the demonstrations you gave was this little block was trying to get from start to its goal, and it would go off in all kinds of different directions, but then suddenly it would find the way it wanted to go, and then it just kept going and going and going into that same pattern. What's the point of that?
The point, of course, that's what we do in our lives, right? We find good ways of behaving, and then we do them more often than we do bad ways of behaving. And we do them over and over again. Now, we don't do them exactly the same. We vary things. We do variations on them, and we experiment, and we explore. And actually, the system I demonstrated today does exactly that. If you looked at it carefully, it didn't always go the same way. It would go small variations. And for example, if there were several ways in which you could get to the goal that were just equally long, equally good, and it wouldn't always do the same one. It would always switch between one and the other.
What would be the application for something like that? What's the bigger goal?
Well, there are actually two answers to that. The applications, though, are all sorts of cases where you have decision-making by computers in optimal control. So that just means like you have a computer controlling, say, a factory, and you have to make a sequence of decisions, and the reward is producing valuable output, producing products, or say you're an oil refinery, and you have a sequence, you have many decisions to make, temperatures of various vats, speed at which various ingredients are added and are drawn off, and you want to maximize the production of the plant. Another one would be a robot. Well, a robot, say, in a manufacturing plant, and it has to make a sequence of decisions in order to put something in place or to weld it on properly. If you look at it, really, the world is full of sequential decision problems where you have performance measures that are received over time. It's not just animals and children. All of our decisions are of this form.
What is the larger goal?
The larger goal, beyond the applications, of which there are many, is to really understand what intelligence is and how minds work, and try to create artificial versions of them. Not because we like artificial versions, but because we really want to understand how the mind works and how intelligence works. And the challenge of making a system that can do those things is one of the best ways to try to understand them.
What's the big challenge for you now?
The big challenge is to start up this group at the University of Alberta. and I really want to make a scientific impact on my field and change the way people think about intelligence.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Richard Sutton, who holds the new ICOR Chair in Reinforcement Learning at the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Machine Learning. Also presenting at the Forum on Data Mining was Dr. Michael Bowling, a recent PhD graduate from Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. Michael will continue his work with games and artificial intelligence in Alberta. And for him, that means working with robots that play soccer.
Right, yeah. So one of the things I've spent a lot of time with, I've done it for 5 years, is in the robot soccer domain, where this is an international initiative that was started about 6 years ago to develop a common platform that lots of researchers can use and evaluate their work on together. And so what we do is we build robots that play soccer and experiment with lots of different techniques and then compare them in an international competition that occurs every year.
Now, some of the terms that you were using, you were developing team plays and termination conditions, and you were dealing with expert algorithms. What's an expert algorithm?
Expert algorithms or expert problems are how do you choose between a number of different experts that are each giving you advice? And so if you have a series of these experts and they all recommend you a different course of action, then you need to decide, well, which person should I listen to? And you want to base that choice on how well those experts have done in the past. And it turns out that if you choose in a certain intelligent way, then you can make certain guarantees that you'll do, say, at least as well as the best expert did, which is a powerful thing to say. You can't necessarily do any better than that, because if you can't do any better than the advice that you're given, but at least you can say you're going to do that well.
So how would that work, for example, in the robot soccer?
Yeah, so in robot soccer, one of the places that we've been using it is that we have a number of different strategies that we can employ to beat a particular team. And we consider each of those strategies as an expert that we could choose to follow. So they're making a recommendation of advice, such as you should try to do a pass in this situation or you should defend in this particular manner. And so we simply choose one of those and we'll see what the outcome is. And then we'll use one of these expert algorithms to decide, based on past history and experience, what play we should select in the future. So if a certain team can be beat by a passing play, then that expert will do well, and then we'll more often select the passing play.
Well, you can do that sort of coaching when you're dealing with your regular team of robots, but what happens when you end up with your pickup players, your pickup team?
Right, so a whole different idea that's only received a little bit of attention. Most of RoboCup has been, which is the robotic soccer competition, is focused on how do we deploy or create a team of robots that's going to play where they know all their teammates because they've all been built by the same designer, and we're just simply going to have them play a game of soccer against an unknown team, but the only thing that's unknown is the opposing team. A new sort of idea is what happens when each of the robots that's going to be on a team comes from a completely different designer. So now not only do you not know what opponent team you're going to play, but you don't even know who your teammates are going to be, and they might be faster or slower than you. They might try never to pass, or they might completely lose the ball when you pass it to them. And so now you need even more adaptation during the course of the game to decide things like, is this a capable teammate, or maybe I shouldn't bother passing to him, or maybe we don't have anyone back playing goaltender, and so the best thing I should do is go back and be goalie. So it's those kind of adaptations. And again, we might imagine that if you could choose different strategies of how you're going to coordinate with the rest of your team members, you can imagine each of those strategies again being some expert that we want to do at least as well as our best way of coordinating with the rest of the teams.
How do they adapt or learn during the course of a game if they have to sort of evaluate what's going on and maybe change a course of action?
Right. So most of the way these systems are set up is it's almost always there's some magic numbers in there, and that's where the learning really gets a chance to do something. So there's going to be some numbers. In my case, we have these weights that determine with what probability various courses of actions will be selected. And then those numbers are exactly what you get to change that actually makes learning occur. So if certain number is really high, then it means we'll select that expert more often. So then what we need to do is now connect what actually happens at the game with how do we modify those numbers. And the way we do that is, well, we can evaluate different outcomes based on actually the signals from the referees. So these robot soccer competitions have all the same characteristics of real soccer competitions. We have fouls and goals and kickoffs and free kicks and penalties and such. So if a particular outcome, if a goal is scored, we know that's very good, so we get a point. And so we can now increment and bump up the weight of the play that caused that to be the case. Whereas if a penalty is called against us or the other team gets a free kick because we kicked it out of bounds and they get to throw the ball in, and that's a bad play, and so the weight gets decremented.
What do you see as being the most significant thing coming out of this right now?
One of the things that robot soccer has done, which I don't think had... There's only been a few examples of this before. Well, there's sort of two things. The first thing is that it focused people on the integration problem. So there's been a lot of research in robotics, in computer vision, in learning and adaptation, but very few people have ever connected all of the pieces together and make a complete system. The second thing is, I think, is it's made robots work more often. So if you have to go to a competition and have your robots work right now at this very moment, then it's a much more, it means that we have to build much more robust systems than if we're just trying to get it work for a week period so we can gather the data so we can publish our papers, or so that we can have the newspaper team come in and take their shots and get the few video clips so we can put up and allow people to see. Now we have to have them work when the competition's going to happen, and having them work now all year round is a much more important issue.
Beyond playing robot soccer, what are the applications for this technology?
Games sort of capture interactions of many different agents, and in our everyday life consists of that all the time. All the time we're moving around and interacting with people and making decisions where each of the people we interact with have different goals that they're trying to achieve. And so in some sense, many of the interactions we do on a daily basis fall into this idea of just being a game. They're much more important than the games that we play to entertain ourselves, but they're still different agents trying to interact to complete goals. So in that sense, there's many different applications. Some of the ones that have already been pursued, RoboCup has started an initiative within its own within the Federation to start trying to transfer the technology that has been used in soccer over to RoboCup Rescue, which they're calling it, which is using robots to do search and rescue and disaster mitigation. So they have both a simulated environment where they can have agents move around and put out fires and rescue people in the simulated world. And we're also building robots that can explore difficult terrain, say after an earthquake and it's hard to move around. And so that's already one domain where many of the techniques of how do we get teams of robots to interact well together and perform teamwork and adapt to other different robots is already going to be applicable.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Michael Bowling, an assistant professor in computing sciences at the University of Alberta and a researcher with the Alberta Ingenuity Center for Machine Learning. I also spoke with Dr. Richard Sutton and Dr. Russ Greiner. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during the program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Conservation Association, the Capital Region Innovation Center, Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.